wakulima wameanza kuona hii pilipili ina faida kushinda mahindi. Mahindi huwa inaisha haraka. Sasa tumeona pilipili inaenda mwaka mzima na inaleta faida kwa family.
Iprod has assisted us really because before we used Iprod, we had challenges with data collection, farmer data collection, and also with the big numbers that are in the field and the few officers that we have, we were not able to capture all these farmers, for instance, when we are to announce for meetings. But currently with Iprod, we are using short message services to ensure we reach our farmers instantly, and also management of these farmers. We are able to do our collection. We are also able to have reports from the farms through our officers through the same application, unlike before when we used to use hard copies.
Hii system ya kutumia simu imenisaidia, manake kitambo nilikuwa nafuata wakulima mmoja mmoja, nitembee niende kwa fulani, kesho tunakutana. Lakini saa hizi vile tunatumiwa ujumbe, kila mtu huwa amejua. Kwa hivyo tukifika hizo masaa, wakulima wote tunakutana pamoja bila kusumbuana.
This is Jan-Willem van Kasteren, and I'm the director of Iprod Solutions.
Hi, and my name is Almut van Kasteren. I'm director number two, also from Iprod Solutions. So in Iprod, what we do is we have developed for ourselves many years back for another company that Jan and I had, supply chain management software. And this is what we are now actually commercializing under Iprod and selling to, I think, about close to over 150 companies, mainly in sub-Saharan Africa. So what we do with the software is basically manage farmers, manage the entire supply chain from the inputs that the farmers use to the actual feed inspections and advice that the farmers need, to access to finance and information, to then the purchasing of the product, fully traceable, which is very relevant now also for, especially in Europe, the traceability laws, and then buying, payment of farmers, and some processing, stocks management, etc. I think this is what we do in short. We train the companies and help them to grow.
I love it. Well, welcome back. I'm so happy to, I'm so happy to have you guys back. This is one of those moments where we've hit the 2-year anniversary of the podcast, and I have literally spoken to over 200 amazing entrepreneurs and innovators all over the world. But I love that I get to speak to you guys. Lily, you guys were in the first 6 months of the podcast, I spoke to you. And now we're literally, we survived the hardest parts of the pandemic. So we're still in the pandemic, but we survived the hardest part of the pandemic. But how has it been? Well, one, hi guys, hello. But tell me how it was for the past 2 years. I have been watching you online. I love that there's so much that's going on in your company, but what has it been like since, let's just say from March, 2020 to now, a full 2 years, what has happened to the business? We'll start business first. Usually we start personally first, but let's start with the business first. What has transpired for you guys?
A grown-up mascot dog. I think when we talked, we had a puppy, COVID puppy, that is now an office dog and follows us everywhere.
But business-wise, we have, I think we struggled a bit in the beginning of the pandemic. I think a lot of companies were, because of all the uncertainty, were not investing in digital tools. But then later, we really caught up. We are now in 18 countries. I think when we did the recording, we were probably in 12 countries. We have grown to more than 30 different sectors. So for us, we really had an opportunity to grow fast. A lot of companies see the relevance of the digital tools. We have a relevant solution. It's affordable. And I think for us, it worked out very well.
And I think what we also did is simply worked on our online implementation and online training. And we have now a big online training program together with a partner organization we work with. So that is really working well.
And also the intake, which is a bit difficult in our situation, the intake process, because we are dealing with a management platform, it's very difficult to really understand all the nitty-gritty of a company so we can configure the system for them. And we really worked on that to make sure that the intake process can be done online. So nowadays, most of our clients, we actually support them online. Full intake, training, implementation, and back office support. So that, yeah, that we found a way to make that work. And it's a big cost saving also for our clients.
I'm intrigued, because prior to the pandemic, as we all know, technology growing fast, but so many people were just like, it's not for me. I don't want to go that route. It's just too much to learn. And then when the pandemic happened, it was like, you had no choice. In order to stay in business, you had no choice. Your company has grown exponentially because of technology. And so talk to me about, how was that learning curve for the customers that you were engaging? You've grown in you're in 18 different countries. That learning curve in different countries depending on the technology that they have in their countries is whether the technology that you have will work for them. The frustration when technology and knowledge doesn't come together. Like, so one would assume it's supposed to come together and it's supposed to work well, but if I don't have great technology, I get frustrated and the learning goes downhill. So talk to me about, how did you convince so many of your clients to really engage, knowing that you may have some technology hiccups, but still we want you to stay the course?
I think a lot of our clients simply see the need for their system. And even though for some of them, the technology is rather complicated because they don't use any systems or hardly any systems yet, they do catch up. And then we don't do the very complicated things with them yet. It's more the, we start simple, with step by step. And then we don't implement the whole system with them, but just the key features, the key functionalities. And that normally is quite okay. Also, so we have this mobile app, right? That is from a user interface easy to use. It's very self-explanatory. So the field extension officers, even though they might not have a lot of training on systems, they easily catch up and know how to use it. And it's only the people in the office that they need to manage the data, but any accountant that is used to accounting software can easily manage our system. So I think we manage that quite well.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe why, how do we manage to get these relatively large numbers now is that I think, yeah, satisfied clients, they talk to each other. They talk to other companies. So we get a lot of word of mouth advertisement. We have started a few, let's say, public-private partnerships with NGOs that work with the private sector. So that helps us also to really scale. Like, for example, in West Africa, we have a project with a research institute that works in 5 countries with 40 rice traders. And we help them to set up traceability from the new sea trials all the way up to the commercial rice production. And yeah, of course, this generates immediately 40 clients. From the beginning, we agreed that we would implement this fully offline, even though I was there a few weeks ago. But this helps us really to grow fast. And that in combination with the positive feedback from existing clients. And also, I must say, we have also tried to professionalize our online marketing. Yeah, so we have a social media person. So I think our materials, they look a bit more professional, the website, the LinkedIn, the YouTube movies, in general. Yeah, so.
So as a marketing person, I always have to ask, what was that moment that you realized that you needed better marketing materials, better the whole entire visibility? I'm looking at your face. So what was that moment for you? Because so many people just assume we've been doing it this way all along, number one. Number two, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And I go, and number three, why would I want to spend that kind of dollar, why do I want to invest in marketing when I should be investing in my people or in the technology. So why did you even like think this is the time to even invest in marketing? I'm sorry, that's a guilty pleasure question because I'm a marketing person, so I had to ask that question.
Oh, good. No problem. I think there's no way around it. There's always only so much time that you have in our presentations. They are okay. But from a design head, I mean, there's so much more that you can do, right? Mm-hmm. So much more professional they can look like. And you never have the time to really do it professionally and nicely and properly. Mm-hmm. So it starts like the whole design of all your material. And then any posters that we did in the LinkedIn or whatever, it's like these captions, they're always like, it's just not very professional. It's always done by us and never really. And in a marketing person, simply that's a profession. And then just now growing our social media platform from, we only have our own personal LinkedIn pages, but we now need to grow the company LinkedIn page. We don't have time to do that. Yeah. And we have looked for somebody that is good for quite some time. And I think now we are very lucky we have a good person. She's very smart and young and engaged and get things done and frees up a lot of time that we tried to do something but never managed to do it properly.
I think we always realized we needed a marketing specialist, but it's also a matter of financing it. Yeah, so now it's actually, we have a full-time person now. So the costs actually are not so extremely high at the end.
She paid for herself 10 times.
Yeah, and we know suddenly because we really understand also about the marketing of our competitors. Mm-hmm. So we see even how much they invest on Google Ads, for example, which is per month probably what we spend in a year. And I don't know how effective that even is. And we always lucky in our company, we have a large group of volunteers that help us in many different topics from different countries. And one of them is a professor of social media from Berlin in Germany.
Yeah.
And he has really helped us also with some very advanced tools to analyze, how you score, how you can improve on the search engine many, many different things. So yeah, we're not there yet, but I think at least what we're doing is very cost effective. And I think it's actually also really effective. We get a lot of attention. Anything we post, we get thousands of views within a day, 2 days. We get lots of feedback on LinkedIn, on YouTube, on
So I have to say that I just want to take your conversation right there and just package it to anyone and everyone that's listening, because I think that people don't pay attention to their marketing until it's either too late or when they've been pushed against the wall where they have no choice. Basically, they're too late, or they do it and they just do it just half, like a half ass. And then they realize, well, look, I don't understand why this didn't go well. Well, you didn't do it properly the right way the first time. You just kind of did it halfway thinking, oh, I'll just get by. So I'm so proud of you guys that you invested the time. You literally took your time to find the right person that is passionate about what they do. Because I always say to people, they don't have to love your company. They should love what they do for your company. And when they're passionate about what they do, they can then take your company and bring it to a whole new level. Too many times people say, well, they don't love it like I do. I'm like, they're not supposed to love your company. Like, nobody loves your company like you do. It's your baby, but they should love tech. They should love operations. They should love finance. They should love all their things that they bring to your company. So I'm so proud of you guys. Marketing person, so proud of you guys.
Thank you.
Where is the industry going now? I mean, you've watched it prior to the pandemic, during the pandemic, and now we're going outside of this particular pandemic. We're moving out of it, still slowly, but we're moving out of it. There's going to be many more pandemics or economic developments in the future. We know we're going to live through this. Where do you see that your industry is moving with the help of what you're doing and even just your competitors? But where do you see the pivot of how the industry is changing because of what has happened?
Yeah.
Because of the pandemic? I think there's another big elephant in the room, which is the climate change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Happy
Earth Day, by the way. I never say dates on things, but today is Earth Day. We are filming you on Earth Day, so happy Earth Day.
To you too. Yes. So I think this whole topic about climate smart agriculture is key. I think this is where we are probably much more relevant than with the pandemic. Yes, pandemic as well, through communicating, reaching out to farmers and digitalization of farmers and providing additional services to farmers. But then in terms of climate smart agriculture, it starts with crop finance, crop insurance. It starts with soil testing and carbon measuring and carbon sequestration. And it's more your topic.
I think in general, if I see, it's like IT is developing, evolving, it's maturing probably. So you see now that instead of in the past, there would be more focus on apps that can do a specific trick. Now there is more attention for bigger platforms that basically can offer like a bundle of services. Like Almo describes, you might want to help your farmers to increase the yield. Therefore, you need to make sure they have better varieties, access to finance, advisory services like soil analysis, weather forecast, agronomic advice. So that whole package, this bundle of services, it needs to be managed. And therefore you need advanced platforms like we can offer. Yeah, and there are a few competitors, of course. I think that is important. What I also see is a lot of focus recently on interoperability. It's one of these very difficult words, interoperability. So I had to practice. So now there is so much attention for it, because you see, I just came back from West Africa, for example. Also there, you see the concel, the cocoa, the cafe, whatever, like the coffee and cocoa board in cocoa in Ivory Coast, for example, or also at other, in other countries, there are initiatives to collect farmer data at national level, for example. Now, often you see that the countries want to build their own platform, basically their own solution that then should fit all these thousands of cooperatives and traders, which is not going to work. So it makes more sense that private solutions, commercially available solutions and affordable solutions are used by the private sector, and they communicate, they are interoperable with the government platform or with other platforms at different levels. So this is really a big thing for now, because it is just crucial to make all this information flow. So that, I think there's a lot of focus there. Luckily, this is really our strength. We have a general platform that you can plug in to exchange information. Not a big shift I see really on the food safety, but at a much higher level. And so, for example, we had, of course, in the last, 2-3 years, we had the big scandal of horse meat. That was, especially in Europe, was a big thing. It was actually from my town, in a little town in the Netherlands, where there were some slaughterhouses and they were selling horse meat as beef. And then recently, of course, there was the fipronil, the pesticide in the eggs. Now, because of this globalization and because of the way we are shifting, moving food all over the world, you see the effect of now of the war in Ukraine. Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia, I think together they produce 35% or 40% of the global wheat in the world. So that's incredible. So a conflict has an enormous effect. So to understand better the at the higher level, at the global level or regional level, the traceability, for example, of product, and you need more advanced systems. So, for example, blockchain is a solution there. And we are discussing with a strategic partner. It's actually a Swiss manufacturer of milling equipment named Buller. We're discussing integration with their blockchain application. And so blockchain, or in general, like food safety, pushing technologies like blockchain, they're really getting more and more attention. I think for years they have been talking about this blockchain, for example, but now I think the situation is ready. So blockchain, bundling of services, interoperability, these things are really on the agenda lately, I think.
I feel that, and I'm happy that you brought up we are dealing with the environment conflicts that are happening. I mean, again, what's happening between Russia and Ukraine is really hurting us globally. And people are not even paying attention how it's the ripple effect of that is going to definitely affect all of us. Some of it very, very visible right now, but lots of it will happen in the coming months, in the coming year. What do you believe, in your opinion, in your with your expertise, that we need to keep doing to stay ahead of the next pandemic, the next conflict, the next financial downturn? What do you think, in your opinion, with what you're seeing, with what you're hearing, that can actually make us think smarter? I mean, right now, I feel like it's Earth Day and everyone's like talking about global, look at the global, well, right now there's a fire in, fires in Arizona, and the fire season has erupted earlier and it's more prevalent. I mean, like it is fast and furious. And so people are now thinking about it, but guess what? We've been dealing with the environment taking a turn for the worse because of what we are doing. So what can we do right now to be a little bit more focused on, we need the technology to answer a lot of these questions faster for us, but what can an average person do? So you're talking to farmers, you are actually with the people that are actually building this technology, you are analyzing everything, but what can anyone that's watching you right now do today, do tomorrow, do next week, to really be aware of, I can actually be part of solving a lot of these problems? I know this is a very large question, but you know me, I love asking the large questions because you're the experts. And I mean, I can ask the question, but I don't know even remotely how to answer it.
Yeah. Can I make an attempt? So, okay, our focus is always business to business. So, I can at least we have some ideas how businesses can make an impact. So, for example, to become less dependent in case of calamities, like now, for example, in the war of Ukraine. If you look at in Kenya, for example, 26 million bags of wheat are imported every year, and locally, only 200,000 bags are produced per year. So that's almost nothing. Yeah? So they're basically for, I don't know what the percentage is, but let's say 95% of the import of wheat, of 99% or so of the local consumption of wheat depends on imports.
But may I ask why is that?
Well, because I think traditionally wheat was not produced here. It's very convenient to import it. It comes in big boats, no quality issues. It was always relatively affordable. And so in Kenya or in general Africa, would focus more on maize, for example. But Kenya is quite lucky. There are regions where wheat could grow very well. Now, we have, together with our partner, Buhler, the Swiss equipment manufacturer, and actually globally the world market leader. I think 60% of the grains is milled with their equipment globally. So with them, we have started a training institute during the pandemic. It's called AfricaGrainsOnline.net. And we offer together a 20-week training course, let's say about half a day a week for the participants. We started in January the first batch, the first cohort, basically with 35 Kenyan millers. And after this, the second half of the year, we will open it up for all over Africa. But these 35 Kenyan millers are trained on six topics by Buhler about food safety, milling technology. So this is a generic training. It's not an advertising campaign for Buhler. They do it as a CSR. They are basically helping the millers to improve their processes. And we have 8 modules about outcropper management. Yeah, so how do you manage contract farming? How do you manage training program in the field, access to finance, different topics. Now, the idea is that the companies should improve the local sourcing and become less dependent on imports. And there, I think, yeah, enormous gains can be made. At the moment, for example, let's say a bag of 2 kilo flour, wheat flour, cost $1.80, and a few months ago it was, I think, $0.55. Yeah, so it's gone up 3.5 times. So this is a huge issue as a consequence of the war in Ukraine. So companies could actually prepare themselves and find a competitive advantage by just doing more local sourcing. And so we can play an important role because we have the tools to enable those companies to work with very large numbers of small-scale farmers, still get the quality and the traceability. And so we started this training program. I'm really excited about it. We have we developed a learning management platform where the millers can basically log in for every module. They can download the reading materials. We upload the webinar itself. There are quizzes and assignments. There is coaching sessions for the individual millers and grain traders. So we are we actually made it fun by including gaming aspects, gamification. I've never done a computer game in my life, but I studied gamification. I read books. So we put in all kinds of elements to make it more fun. And the millers are competing against each other, depending on the activity, depending on how active they are in the assignments, in the quiz, in the forum, in the chat, they can gain points. And each point basically helps them basically build their own mill and outgrow a scheme. So let's say in the first module, it's about milling equipment. You can afterwards get a badge, which represents let's say a pre-cleaner in the mill. So this pre-cleaner can have a capacity between 2 and 12 metric tons per hour, depending on how active you have been in the training course. Now, there are basically 14 different steps in the mill. So there are 6 machines and there are 8 items basically that you need to organize, like you need to have the banks in place, the training program for the farmers, the different aspects. And then this way you can basically grow and compete with other mills, because those that are most successful, they win. At the same time, we also have a competition, a joint mission, a shared mission between all those 35 participants, because if they are successful and they increase the local capacity of producing grain, maize, wheat, then they actually can substitute the imports for local product, which improves the situation of Kenya, because it's better for the millers, it's better for the competition, for the consumers, it's better for the farmers, and so they have a joint mission as well. And so we try to make it fun, and actually this training program, we try to also introduce it in French. And we are discussing something similar, but then specifically for the cocoa industry. Mm-hmm. So Brüller has a number of training centers all over the world. There's one in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. I just came back from there last week. In Abidjan, they have the Cocoa Competence Center. And together with them, we want to set up a specialized training program online, also free of charge, for those involved in the cocoa sector.
So I love the fact that you say business to business, because at the end of the day, I always say it's humans, human to human, because if you did not form those great relationships, if you didn't have and provide something that's so enticing for them to grow, they wouldn't be engaged. The businesses can't write the check. So it's always the humans that are really engaged with what you're doing. And I love that they're seeing such value with what you're bringing. So I'm going to switch it, because you just said something, well, you've been saying it, where you're clearly traveling a lot. So you're clearly like going out a lot. How has that been for you, where you went from being at home all the time during the pandemic, to now you're going back to traveling and visiting and seeing all these different people, and your company is growing. Are you missing the togetherness of just having your family dynamic? Or are you enjoying the whole entire, like, we are open, school's open, we are like traveling again? Like, how is that aspect of from the time that we spoke to now?
You mean the homeschooling and the COVID doc? And so we are stuck with a COVID doc that just follows us step by step, room by room, wherever we go into the car. It's quite funny. So it's now the office dog. Everybody loves our dog. Everybody loves it. The kids are back to school, which is helpful, extremely helpful. So having kids at home is just not very productive.
Hard for you or hard for them? What was hard the most for you guys?
I think the kids loved it.
Yes, but it's
also,
just...
Yeah, I think they also liked to just be with us. And
yes.
During COVID, I hardly traveled, of course. Mm. So that was also nice for me and for the kids to spend much more time together. Mm. Now I'm going back more traveling, but... to be honest, I don't want to go back to the situation it was before, where I was away like half of the time.
You don't enjoy it so much anymore either, right?
No. To be honest, I just returned from 3 weeks in West Africa, different countries. And I don't have the same excitement. You know, let the young people in the team do the traveling. And I don't mind to travel. It's also important for some of the bigger partnerships. I don't want to go back to travel so much. Fortunately, we have really had some big changes in the team. So we have a lot of, we always had these big traineeships for the client relationship team and also for the development team. So now we see after a few years that we are developing the junior managers from there. We hired a very experienced chief operating officer. So we have had the company has really changed. I mean, my role is changing, Almut's role is changing. We gave ourselves very fancy titles.
Yeah.
Like
we introduced the C levels, which I think you have to do.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very United States of you, the C levels.
Well, we were told if you want to raise investors, this is what you need to do. You need to have your board, you need to have your C levels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then So we are doing all of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, actually, we have worked very hard, already for a year or so, more than a year, just to have our business plan ready and our investment plan and the pitches. And actually, we started a few weeks ago with a few pitches to potential investors, and we have many more coming up. So we hope, that we can find investors also because we have... we have all these plans to fill more positions at higher level, grow further from bottom up with junior people, fill more positions in different countries, like full-time consultants, basically. Yeah. So to realize all that, we also do need external capital.
What advice would you give to anyone that's watching you that they have, they can go back and listen to the first interview. And then they are watching you now and they've seen how you've grown. People just assume small businesses, entrepreneurs, innovators, they're always status quo. And when they hear upward tick, they hear the Jeff Bezos, the Oprah Winfrey, they hear the big, big names. So you have like strong and steady, you've been growing your business. You've taken on advice to actually really focus on getting rid of certain positions, adding other positions. What advice would you give to anyone that's listening in regards to the transition that you have gone through over the 2 years and where you want to go? What are the steps that one would take if they want to grow their business to scale? From your opinion, where you are right now.
I think you first need to have your systems in place. So you need to have proof of concept. Right? So have a product that actually really makes sense. Have your systems in place, your structures in place, and then come up with a realistic growth plan. So if I look into sometimes, especially in Africa and Kenya, it seems to be like an investor hub. And I sometimes, especially now going through our budgets and the five-year planning, etc., if I look how much money different people raise versus how much you actually need, I just think for anybody in that sector, you should remain realistic and not get distracted by big amounts of monies, but just really be down to earth and be very, I guess this is also what women businesses are known for. So it belongs to both, but then I heard that women are just much more realistic than men. So anyway, we had this discussion just recently that the investments. So men just think always much deeper and much bigger than women do. And I think from a growth perspective, an investor's perspective, just try to remain realistic, because I also heard of companies that then raise too much money and then they are stuck. So we heard about this company that is interested in buying us because they're failing to do what they're supposed to do. And now desperately look for an alternative. So I think this is not a solution. Stick to what you do, stick to what you're good at, develop your concepts, you put your systems in place and structures, and then grow and do what you're good at. And don't try to point in a fish in too many different ponds and dream too big. I think that to me makes sense.
I think we have been together in business now for 18 years. And so before we had another company that had, let's say, much less potential to scale, because it was direct agriculture, big outgrower scheme, 8,000 farmers, but more difficult to scale that, and much more risky in a way so we never wanted to raise big money for that, because we thought it was actually we were more, let's say, in the stage of grant funding, because it was risky what we were doing. We could have gone bankrupt 50 times in those years. This IT company is different, I think, also because not only that we have a good product, like Almut said, you need to have a good concept or good product and prove it, but you also need to know how to run a business. And the stages in the business, you need to recognize them, you need to prepare for every stage. Yes, so I think there we have learned a lot, because we had such a complicated business before. This IT company is in a way relatively easy. I mean, it's difficult, but it's still, you can feel that it's more easy to scale. And we're proving that. And that's why we are now actually really looking for external investors, because now we feel this is, we can give up equity. This is, we still have a good, we will benefit a lot. We make sure that the investor benefits. This is like a very fair deal. I think a lot of companies, they start very early. From the moment they start, they focus on raising capital. The whole business concept, I see when I participate in panels, I see companies that basically have nothing to show, but they present themselves very well. And I see that it is much more about, the whole focus is really about already getting in touch with the potential investors, building that relationship, so within a couple of years they can attract capital. Often I see that the capital is just outrageous. Everything is in the millions of dollars, and we have learned also you don't need the millions. I mean, it can also become a burden, because then it's like whether you take a loan from the bank or whether you have an investor, they do expect you to then prove that what you promised them, you can make that come true. So I think we also look for a significant amount, but I think we have a very realistic business plan. And everybody dreams about finding this unicorn that will have a multiple of 50 or whatever some investors dream of. Yeah, I mean, we can make a model and come up with the same crazy numbers, but I think we just need also a realistic investor that understands our market and has realistic expectations.
And they grow.
We'll grow. I mean, I'm sure in a few years we will dominate the market.
Yeah, that's maybe another tip. Always be aware of your competition, see what they are doing, listen to their clients. We have quite a few clients that from the competition comes to us. That give us access to their tools from the competition. So that's very interesting that we know exactly where the weaknesses are, and we have a very strong reputation on the ground. So our clients love us, which I think is also very good.
Yeah. Like, for example, one of our strengths is really the back office support. So of course the system has to be functioning and all that, but then the intake process, the training, the back office, we're always there when the client has a question. That is so important for the clients that we work with, because they are scared basically of the whole digitalization process. They understand they need it, but it's scary, because you might become too dependent, and then it might not work, and you might fail, the whole company might fail because of a tool you have selected. And so we understand those fears. I mean, we were scared when we used it ourselves in 2004 in the beginning. We had to build it up step by step. So we understand all these phases, we understand the worries of the client. And yeah, I think that's a huge advantage. We see with some of our competitors, yeah, they push the technology to the limit, which is of course good, but at the end you're dealing with managers. Often they are very risk averse. They're not so much aware of
possible.
Yeah, and they are. Yeah.
They just need a lot of hand holding, like what you mentioned at the beginning. Companies that were not using systems because they didn't want to, etc., and suddenly they think they have to. You just need to do a bit of hand holding and be there for them. Yeah. And that's a very important thing.
Our sector is so conservative that once you have a client, it's not that they're going to walk out because suddenly there's another competitor. Yeah, so it's really worth it to invest a lot of time in the beginning, make sure they're comfortable. We have set up all kinds of systems to get these feedback loops at different levels with our client. Also make sure that things can be escalated when we mess up, for example. So that helps. Once you have a stable, strong relationship, you know, that client, hopefully, but it will be for the long term. It's not per season or...
I have to say that, you guys just gave like 6 to 7 great tips that people, they know it, they've heard it, they don't do it. And I think that's one of the things where people are just so fast to make the money. You said it so well, where banks give women money because they know they're going to pay it off. And women are very conservative of how much they take from a bank or from an investor, VCs, angels. And men do say, they're like, we'll go for the higher number. We're like, well, do we really need the higher number? So I do love that you just said that out loud, because there's McKinsey, Bain, all the big, huge consulting firms have done studies. That was part of my MBA thesis, about how I went to like 14 different countries. And it's so amazing how micro banks give micro loans to women 100% faster than to men, because they know it's that the return is a lot faster. Not to take away from you, Jan, because we love you, but it is one of those moments where what she was saying is it's very, very true to form. And I think it's as the world grows stronger on the technology side, it's going to be more and more aware, apparent of what businesses will grow, who will get the loans, who will get the engagements, but also who will actually get acquired. I mean, get acquired faster. And so I love how you're both giving me the perspective, but not just me, but anyone that's listening, in regards to how you're seeing the business world, how you're seeing it, the best advice and what you've learned throughout this entire process, and how you've learned from your old business as well as your present business, and how you're helping people. And just, you just said it, where sometimes you just have to hold someone's hand. They don't know they need help until they need help. And so just to know that they have a company that they believe in, they've had a bad experience somewhere else, they come to you, they see how other people have said, like, go to these guys, they know what they're doing, and you're educating, which, as a former educator, I always say that if you do not educate your clients, you're wasting an opportunity, because you're the experts. And because you're the experts, you are the ones that have to show them something that they just don't know. They don't know what they don't know. So I love, love, love how you said that. I want to go back to the company, to your family, for a split second. You're doing all of this. You're growing, you're bringing in the right people, you're filling in some holes and positions. Are you doing all of this to, to be able to go and grow another business, to spend more time with the family, get acquired? I mean, what is the end goal for you in regards to this company? Because you've had a company before that didn't do well. You have this company, but then now you've pivoted and you've added more. What is the end goal for your company and for the bigger picture overall? What's the big picture? I mean, you don't have to tell me the secret sauce, but what's the ultimate goal for, because you spend so much time with the family. You clearly just said that you you, I mean, traveling is a thing, but it's not the thing anymore. So what do you see yourselves doing?
Well, okay. Could maybe just small remarks. So we actually did sell the other company. So we did create value in that company and we sold it last year. So
congratulations.
Didn't do as well as we wanted to, but we were able to sell it. So it is that was quite an achievement, I think. But basically, okay. So for everybody, there are different roles in the company. Yeah, so I think me and Almut, we have managed to set up the company. I think our strength is to set up systems, come up with the policies, recruit. So we can do basically a bit of everything. And I think that is our strength. But now, for example, we have hired a chief operating officer, somebody with 28 years of experience working for NGOs. He was a country director of World Vision. He was a regional director for big NGOs. So he has come in to take over more operational work because the operational burden was quite high. He already indicated he would love to be the CEO, which I think is fantastic. Let me step out in a couple of years or focus more on business development. That's something I enjoy a lot. We never started this company so we could sell it and then basically retire or start something else. If that happens, if somebody wants to invest in the company and they say we can grow the company better without you, fine. If I can stay on board or maybe I get bored, whatever. That's all open. But for the moment, our focus is, let's say, a few years ahead, where this company has to grow to become a global South, let's say, market leader as a company providing a supply chain management platform. And then after that, we see again. It will take years before somebody will ask me to leave. But I'm happy to prepare our operating officer to take over more of the daily burden because it's a lot. I think really there are different people suitable. Even if this company grows to 100 people, fine. If it grows to 1,000 people, I might really not be the best person anymore to manage it. Let somebody else take over that headache, and I focus on things that I enjoy more.
I think actually that Jan will always, and also we will always find something new to be done. So if somebody wants to come and take over completely, I'm sure that you're not short of ideas to start something new completely again. Yes, and I think Jan is so full of ideas and I am full of other ideas. I think any company will always be too small for us at one point.
Yeah, but then...
Yes.
Yeah,
so. I love that answer.
I think this is what it is. Yeah. There's always so much to be done. Yeah. I think for me, what would be nice is to see the company in good hands and eventually move on and start something afresh again.
I mean, something I can say, I think we're both very proud of, that the other company, even though we couldn't scale it as much as we wanted, we have sold it. Somebody is taking care of that company, growing it further, and has the capital and the ambition. And we are supporting the new owner to achieve that. And yeah, that feels very good. It would feel terrible if we had closed it or if we had sold it to somebody that it would have a completely different vision. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have also a few aspects in this company which are a bit contradicting if you just purely want to make money, but we still do it in our own way. Like, for example, we really want to make sure that this product is available for the really small and the weaker companies, mm-hmm. that it's affordable. At the same time, these are weak companies that need a lot of attention. So this is very contradicting. How do you achieve those weak companies? How can they introduce a professional supply chain management platform? While they don't have the money, really. They operate in very small margins, lots of market uncertainty. But this is what we have decided to do, because this is also the opportunity. If we get it right, mm-hmm. Of course, in each country in Africa, there are a few successful big exporters, and everybody would like to sell the software there. They can probably even afford SAP or Oracle. But we aim at these tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, small cooperatives, small traders that also need professional systems and who can simply not afford it. So if we open that market, we will be highly successful, hopefully in a couple of years, and then maybe we step out.
Ahmad, I love the fact that he is so business oriented right now. I love it. Last conversation, we were just like, I go, this is where we are, talking about the dog, talking about the family. He is back talking business all the time, which I very, very focused. I like this.
Yes. I still want to say that I also want these big players as well.
Yeah, we need to have a healthy portfolio of the bigger clients that our competitors aim
at. Which we also have.
Which we get anyway, because often they get disappointed and then they come to us, but not always, but yeah. I must say, Almut, he was actually yesterday with a German minister for a German business association event, and she was introduced as
a real entrepreneur.
There are many business people there, but the president of the German Business Association in Kenya, she introduced her as the real entrepreneur.
But also because a lot of them simply represent a lot of the big players, right? Like Lufthansa or BASF or whatever.
The big established companies, yeah. Yes. So we are the pioneers doing building companies. Yeah.
Exactly. I love it. All right. So before I ask my last question, I'm gonna ask the important question. So can you still answer the question of did you marry well?
Better and better. There were moments that we were fighting in front of the staff, and I think we have really improved.
My memory. Now, awkward. I think I would not want to have married anybody else. But sometimes you wonder whether that's a good choice.
Yeah, no comments.
No, awkward.
Okay. So, this is always my favorite question, because like you guys just fit in so well, like a perfect puzzle. So I love watching you interact. I love how you, where one says an answer and the other one says another answer, but it matches very, very well. So I love you guys. I cannot wait to one day be in Kenya to see you guys live. So Mokha, that is like the goal in the next 2 years, to be in Kenya and visit you guys live. So
you welcome. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's, well, I mean, traveling is back. So I spend 70% of my time overseas. So yes, that is one of my goals. So keep that in mind, that I will be visiting sooner than later. But all right. So to end, because I have to see the puppy. I have to see the dog.
Oh. She's sleeping.
Yeah. Where? Oh, there she. Oh, she's beautiful. Wait, is she a ridgeback?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love one of my girlfriends has two. Well, she has one now. Oh, beautiful. They're good dogs. They are such good dogs.
They are very good dogs, but so attached. Honestly. I walked around the pillow, and then she followed me walking around her pillow. And then I walked again around the pillow and she followed me. She just follows me on every single step.
When they say unconditional love, that's unconditional love. Like, yes. Because no matter what you do, they will always be there with you. I love it. Oh, beautiful. Oh my God, so happy that you have a Ridgeback. Those are great dogs. I'm so happy. Because not a lot of people even know what a Ridgeback is. But the second I saw you could see it on the back.
Yes.
Good job. Okay, so I have taken so much of your time. But I always, as you know, we end the same way, no matter how many times I speak to you, we always end the same way. So we're going to have four answers here. If you had a personal ask and a professional ask of anyone that's listening to you right now, what would be your personal ask and what would be your professional ask?
My personal ask. I wouldn't mind, not to go back to the traveling like before, but that's of course also immediately work related, but I would like to spend more time with family and with my wife. And professionally, I'm a bit boring, but also, the workload is a lot. So it would be nice if, we really can fill some senior positions and make sure that some of the workload disappears from my shoulder. That would be nice.
I have a professional ask for everyone. So that's implement climate smart activities wherever you work, whatever you do, think of what you do, whether it's with fertilizer or chemicals, or whether it's at whatever it is related to, just think about climate. And the personal is very closely related to that, as much as I love having him at home. It's similar, like something like the three R's, reduce, reuse, and recycle, right?
Your husband.
Not the husband. Maybe reuse.
Oh my God, you guys are so funny. No, we don't want to recycle or reduce the husband, no. And we don't want to reuse them either, so. Oh my God, you guys are the absolute cutest, the cutest. And I'm so proud of you because you've done so much. It's shocking how fast this 2 years has gone by. It is, as long as, I mean, knock on wood, people stayed healthy or tried to stay healthy or recovered from COVID or any ailment that they had, it went fast. It went really fast. And to see how much you've done in this time is just so inspiring because you enjoyed the time with your family. You enjoyed really spending time with the kids. Because I remember you were saying last time where sometimes if they don't want to do schoolwork, go play, go watch TV. Like you let them be kids. And I think that took pressure off of you and it took pressure off of them, but you enjoyed the family unit. Your pandemic dog is beautiful and loves you unconditionally, but you grew your business. With all of that, you still found time to balance, and it wasn't easy, but you found time to grow your business, to get one business got acquired. And bravo. I mean, you are so inspiring in so many different ways. And the biggest part, you did it as a team, husband, wife team. I mean, that's huge. And you didn't kill each other. You did it as a team. So you probably aren't even aware of it until someone says it out loud, but you guys did a lot in 2 years and you're still smiling and you're still kidding around and you're still looking at each other like, yay. You're like, good. That's all I'm going to say. Two thumbs up.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Julie.
Oh my God. Thank you. And again, until the next time, I always say this is never going to be the last time, but I mean, I will always keep an eye on you guys. I will always watch what you're doing. And I'm like, whenever you need me, just let me know you need me and I will always be there for you.
Great. Just come in 2 years. That would be fun.
It's one of those moments where people are like, what are you coming to? I know. I go, as long as you get boosted, as long as you have your shots, as long as you have your paperwork, they let you in and I will come.
That's great.
All right, my friends, have a wonderful, wonderful day. And again, happy Earth Day.
Yes, happy Earth Day to you as well.
Happy Earth Day. Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Again.